This is an iHeartRadio New Zealand podcast.
You're known for surfing the biggest wave ever at Bondi.
I guess it's like playing a game of footy or something you guys can relate to in there.
What's that for you, Rick?
Why are Australians so fired up about Bazball?
For Australia, I think it lands perfectly in our hands.
Do you use tape when you go to sleep?
Yeah, so it started with mouth tape. My husband actually bought it for me.
You've got to start with romance and, you know, once the curtains go down, who knows?
It's dark or light outside. Sunshine Coast snake catching organisation.
Good to see you again, Stu.
Good to see you, Lenny. How are you, mate?
What's the nastiest snake in Australia?
They're quite a handful sometimes to try and catch.
The horned cockweevil in the South Island as well, which is...
Friend at university? The thing I've really taken out of this is the more floggings you get, the happier you are.
Are you in a caravan or something?
It's a halo. I'm in my house bus. You know, it's a new age relationships. You know, it's not the first radio, and it's when Herbie the house bus gets a little bit of a workout. You know, it's a delightful thing. All parked up outside Rangitoto. High romance. There's a little bit of, look at that there, a little pina labiata for dinner tonight.
Yeah, a couple bottles.
Lovely.
Yeah.
You right, Macca? Talking about romantic evening?
Yeah, I'm pretty happy when this is over, to be honest.
Well, the sooner I start, the sooner we finish.
Yeah, here.
Right. Welcome to, aren't you supposed to do Welcome to Sports Cafe?
Oh, you do such a good job.
Come on, Taylor.
But now you've put me off. You've just tried to start.
He puts us all off.
That's what he does.
I don't know why he's on this show. Imagine how good it would be if he wasn't.
Seriously, I reckon us four could do a killer show.
We wouldn't talk any sport, but.
It's true. It'd appeal to the younger people, wouldn't it? You know, I mean, yeah, I'd be the oldest. Yeah. You're almost in retirement, mate, you know? You should be doing better than a TV show like this in your retirement.
All right, it's funny, is it?
It's time to give up, mate. Just give up.
My expense. Right, let's start. Welcome to Sports Cafe. I'm really excited to introduce Connor, who's laughing at my expense.
I love you, mate.
Taylor, who was supposed to do this intro. Lenny, who's in Nepal. And my co-producer, Mr. Mark Ellis.
Oh, shit, it's nice to finally be recognised, Rick, with such a title. Co-producer. And, I'm not responsible for this shit either. You know,
you're living in a house bus.
Well, no, I am for two nights. I mean, as I said a minute ago, it's new age relationships. You know, you're not first radio. And, you know, with kids from both sides, you might only get, as I do, a couple of days every 2 weeks where you can bring out Herbie, the house bus, and you park her up in a beautiful romantic location like this. You make the pina arrabbiata, and you hope God's on your side.
With what? Is like the weather or something?
Well, you know, I mean, most people...
Don't go into detail.
Stop. Well, he's parked on the ocean.
No,
I just
stop.
Thought, you know, get a nice calm day.
I don't know any more about romantic evening.
You've got to start with romance, and, you know, once the curtains go down, who knows? You know, dark or light outside.
Stop talking.
Do you still have sex when you're 65, Rick?
Do you at least have curtains or something to pull down?
No, shit, no, mate. I tell you what, this it's bloody full around here. You know, they pay top dollar to be next door to us. That doesn't make the show.
That's on the show. That's on the feed. Someone save the show. Lenny, tell me about the Ashes quickly. What's why are Australians so fired up about Bazball? Everyone's like takes it like a personal insult.
Well, I think the journos have got nothing else to talk about. They're so fixated on the word Bazball. I mean, you look at like Ricky Ponting era, Matthew Hayden era. He was walking down the wicket in the first over, and they were scoring 400 runs plus in a day more consistently. Without the roller coaster of getting bowled out for 80 every second or third test. So, look, Bazball, it's just a word. And all the journos are just, as I said, fixated on it. But it's a style of play. It's a new age play, a bit similar to like Mark on his house bus there. But, it's just a word. But at the end of the day, we've got a second test coming up at the Gabba on Friday, day-night test. I actually think it's going to be another 2 or 3 day game myself, which is not ideal for the punters, but for Australia, I think it lands perfectly in our hands.
Why do you think it'll only be 2 or 3 days, Lenny?
So with the pink ball, as you know, Taylor, in that twilight period, it starts to swing around corners, starts to move, so it's harder to hit. I think both batting lineups aren't there yet. We'll see the hundreds later in the series. Obviously, Trevor said in the first test was magnificent, but I just think hitting a pink ball under lights is so much harder, and catching under lights as well, especially at the Gabba, you'll notice the seats are all different colours. So to see a pink ball square of the wicket, it's quite hard to catch. So it's been a spectacle, but
true.
I don't know, Taylor, have you got your thoughts?
Better a pink ball than a blue ball, I reckon.
Yeah. I'm starting to fall asleep here. I don't understand. Why do we talk about it every week? How long does it go for?
There's five tests, five games each.
What month can we wrap this up?
Like in the January.
Jesus Christ. Well, I'll come on the show when it's all done.
Big Ashes fan. Steve Smith is batting in the nets with black tape under his eyes. Did you see that?
Yeah, he's got the Shivnarine Chandrapal. Like, I think Tom Brady did it as well. NFL career. And Steve Smith, he's got a place in New York, so he tries to take on a few of their traditions. I think it tries to, with the twilight, as I said, under lights, it tries to stop the reflection. Does it do anything? Fuck knows.
He ended up with Giselle too. Yeah. So, I mean, let's not bag him.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll be wearing black eyes. Forget about it. You know, if it worked.
Do you use tape when you go to sleep?
Yeah, yeah. So it started with mouth tape. My husband actually bought it for me.
This is how we're talking.
Yeah, and I like dribble and sleep in my sleep too. And like that. I was like suffocating. Jesus. So he bought me mouth tape. I am. Thank you. And then after I had kids, it was too hard to rip open the tape when I was breastfeeding at night, so I found nose tape.
Is it the clear tape you use, or do you use like a...
I've got black tape as well. I don't know, maybe my sellers buy me the cheap version.
No, it's also good under lights for the pink ball.
Mm. Oh, well,
some of the boys have started wearing the clear nose straps at training.
What, to help them breathe better?
Yeah, help them breathe better.
See, there you go.
Any improvement in their Broncos?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, if you broke your nose, fair enough.
The deviated septum.
I had mine fixed.
You need a power drill.
Early in my career, had it fixed 2 years ago, and then just 1 year later, just broke it again. So I think I'm just going to have to rock it for the rest of my career.
Macca, you weren't known for your hit-ups, really, were you?
No. It was. You know, the sideline was my friend, Rick.
What about Nelson's? Lead
joke.
Yeah. We'll tell you when he's made a joke.
We need a sign now. Laugh now.
Jesus Christ, mate. I thought Aussies and Kiwis were kind of similar.
You're just not even in the.
What about the big fella, Nelson Lasifa Solomona, is going to take up?
Can you spell that?
Yeah.
Can you spell that, mate?
Without reading.
Yeah.
Without reading it.
Nash, NAS.
He's one scary dude, really.
Yeah, he's a big man. Yeah. He's from Wellington, Macca.
He can throw him too. Oh. I don't know, like a few years ago he got in a fight and there was it was like in Bali or something.
No, I was there.
Oh, brilliant.
And
he has hands, seriously.
And like he's a head above everyone else. Who the fuck wants to fight him? Honestly.
I know.
What happened? Talk us through it.
Well, I was a bit blurred vision myself, but I just saw the Nelly from Welly come over the top, and some blokes were just having a go at him. Then it was just all on. And much like yourself, like your winger status, I was fine on the sideline. I was like on my scooter getting pushed out.
But yeah, he I think he'll be good at it, to be honest. Like when he's, I've played him some, like, and he's been that fit, and like, he's just so aggressive, and he's so much bigger than everyone else. So.
He's huge, isn't he?
Yeah, like he is. Honestly, a monster.
He took down Jared Wallace a couple of years ago.
They boxed, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, there's a story around that there's a female presenter is training to be an NRL commentator, which to me is just like, so what?
Yeah.
But it's created quite a big storm. People are like, how dare a woman think that she can commentate on the NRL?
But is this coming from actual, like, accredited journos or something, or is this just heroes in the comment section?
It was just Macca.
Is this where you tell us that it's Taylor trying to become a commentator?
It's just stupid. It's a nothing story. It's just a person getting a job, training to excel in their career. I don't understand what the big hoo-ha is about.
How do you train to become a commentator?
You do 5 years on Sports Cafe. Mm. And then
once I've got walk, 4 more years left of this.
And then it doesn't get any better.
You just jump in front of a screen, you with a microphone, you just do play by play and then wait for your opportunity. And I think it's amazing.
She's also been around the game for years as well. So her brother's Emma. Plays. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Emma Lawrence.
Yeah. So she's not just like a anybody.
She's good.
Great.
She's a good judge. Well, it wasn't long ago that it happened in cricket. And is it Isha Guha? She's brilliant. Fantastic. Yeah, you know, fantastic. It's a nice feminine touch. I think it, you know, I always thought the Aussie commentary, like, I'd far prefer to watch Aussie play whomever than watch New Zealand play even the best teams in the world, because our commentators are so dull and boring, whereas the Aussies are fantastic.
What I find with the other way, if there's a male commentator commentating on the female NRLW, it's quite controversial, but they've got to be mindful what they say. It's like, or she's had a good pre-season, or you know what I mean? But I'm trying to get it. If you say that about Luttrell, that he's bulked up, or if you say that about a female, do you know what I mean?
So yeah. Well, third man. You can't call it third man. What's a third person these days down there?
Yeah,
down the
right. Side? Yeah.
Shit.
Well, what do you think about in the NFL, Minnesota Vikings have a male cheerleader?
Mm.
You happy with that?
Oh, yeah, mate, of course.
I feel
the hesitation.
It's all part of game day entertainment.
Yeah, you're not really happy, are you?
No, I was never talented enough to make the NFL, so he obviously is.
Yeah. Took your spot.
He did, yeah. No, but it's whatever, I feel like.
Well, you guys would remember the 100 metres final when Linford Christie was in it.
Well, I do, but no one else
does. That's all I've got to say about that, really, isn't it?
Back
up. Yeah. Well, Linford Christie, mate, you know. And you can wonder why there's bloody 300,000 women sitting in the stand watching it.
Yeah.
Linford Christie's the English version of Matt Sherrington.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Sherbo.
The visual.
Sherbo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Move along.
Move along. Sorry, applause. Thank you. Just before we wrap up on the cricket.
We're still talking about that.
Yeah.
We're going back. Okay, cool.
Wait, did Lenny win his comp?
No, I'm still going. We're undefeated. We're 5 from 5. I've scored about 40 runs total, so I'm absolutely can't hit the ball.
I was going to say congrats.
Just
but I'm going to base camp next week, so I'm pumped for that.
Oh, are you hiking there?
No, I'm getting a helicopter.
Oh, what a fancy.
Don't stay for too long.
No, I might do my Wim Hof breathing before I go.
Hopefully yeah, that's
like
my dream.
Help you out, bro. They reckon whiskey's to go there. Like it's good for thinning the blood.
Oh, nice.
Probably the best option. You know, you don't want to go with carbonated alcoholic beverage.
So when's the final, Lenny?
We've still got 2 more round games, and then we're in finals. So we're sitting top of the table. So hopefully we just go straight through the final, and then I'll be back on Aussie turf about December 15 for the kick off the Big Bash. Another big circus.
Look, some more. I wanted to get back to the Ashes because it is something that's really important, something that Taylor's really you're excited by.
Yeah.
To sum it up for us, let's just go to the off-field podcast, guys. They've just got a good summary on it.
And it was something that was completely missed in the first test. There's not enough technical leaves in test cricket. Like a good old-fashioned... No! You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to swing at everything.
Yeah.
Like, what happened to a good old-fashioned technical leave? They kept bowling short shit to head, and he was just clipping him for 6 at one point.
Yeah, well, he does that. That's what he's made of. Yeah, he's made of that bread and butter.
He's different grade.
Yeah.
The Poms, because they're Pommies are they're some of the dumbest people I've ever come across. We offered them a 2-day in Canberra coming up to play the pink ball. So, you know, come here, you can get used to what it's like to be the pink ball. Brendan McCullum and Bazball go, we don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And then Vaughan, who's, you know, an England great, comes out and goes, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Like, now the fact that when Poms call each other stupid, that's where we all giddy up as Aussies. Because they're already...
We don't do that to each other. We kind of give each other shit. We might do it here and there, but we won't be, you know.
I would never call you two stupid.
No, nor would I. No.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Unreal debrief.
We've got an actual guest in the studio for the first time ever. It's a big momentous occasion.
That's awesome.
We haven't got all our presenters in the studio, but we have got a guest, Chase Hardacre.
Yes.
Yeah. Well. Welcome to the show. Now, Chase is a big wave surfer and also on Bondi Rescue.
So, mate.
Because you're known for surfing the biggest wave ever at Bondi. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that one hit the media. The old Bondi at Bambuckler. It was like a year ago or so. One of the big swells, I don't know, you guys might have seen it in the media. It slammed through icebergs, like up at the top there, world famous icebergs through Bondi. And I just managed to happen to get a wave amongst many others that were also out there, mind you, like grommets as well, like heaps of kids. And I got a wave, got it photographed, and then kind of reaped the rewards for it. But there was heaps of people out there.
How big was it?
Well, like 15, 20 feet, like high. Like
What goes through your mind when you're lying there, you know, on your tummy and you look behind you and it's huge, right? And
yeah, well, I don't know. I guess it's the same as like listening to like footy. Like I'd rather have a like 20 footer land on my head than Spencer Lenu running straight at me. So it's kind of the same thing. Like we like just different thinking. I'm comfortable in the water, so I've grown up with it. And obviously when you get to the point where you're underwater and you're getting thrown around and then you start getting the fear like, when am I coming up? That's where it gets like a bit more of a psychological worry.
Do you wear a vest?
Yeah.
Have you ever had to pull it to come
up? No, I haven't pulled it yet. No, actually, I pulled it once in the shower. It's like an inflatable vest, and then I couldn't get it off. I'm walking around there like the Michelin man. The valve's at the back, and you got to deflate it. But no, I haven't had to pull it yet, thank God. But yeah, we got these like canisters, CO2 canisters from like a scuba tank, and you can pull it and it inflates you and pretty much shoots you up.
Do you train for holding your breath underwater?
Oh, like yeah, like coming into the start of the year, I definitely try to, like bit of swimming, bit of training.
Any Wim Hof?
Trying to stay fit. No Wim Hof. I've heard your Wim Hof story though. If I started doing that and pass out before a wave, I don't know if I'll come back.
Yeah. Don't do that.
I'll steer clear for now.
The America's Cup sailors have got that little canister which they basically can put in their mouth like a mini scuba tank underwater, gives them a couple of minutes of breath. Do you carry one of them?
Nah. I mean, I'm sure it might come into the future like later, but it's definitely not a thing at the moment. I don't know what you're talking about, though, those canisters, and you can go scuba diving on them. But yeah. I think there is, like, a depth limit and, like, something with, like, inflated. I'm not too sure how they all work, but it hasn't really hit big wave surfing yet.
I saw a great clip from Laird Hamilton where he talked about someone said to him, do you get scared? And he said, absolutely, I get scared. And then I channel that fear to get myself into the right state to surf a big wave. Is that what you do? Do you genuinely get scared and go, right, now I can use this adrenaline to do my job?
Yeah, for sure. Like before you're surfing and before you go out, like you're literally looking at a swell for a week and the adrenaline straight away, you're like, what's it going to be like? Is this going to be that big? Because they can't forecast it, you know, so you're always prepared. And that's the adrenaline that you get, and it's like a week build up. And I guess it's like playing a game of footy or something you guys can relate to, and then it finally happens, and then you get out there.
What's that for you, Rick?
What's that for you? Watching Housewives in Beverly Hills.
He's prepped for this show. Yeah.
And then once you're finally out there, it's sweet. Like, and everything else happens, and then you finally get calm. And then,
sorry, mate, did you want this knife that you just put on my back? I just Thanks,
mate. Yeah. Mate, I've got a couple of mates I was just having a yarn to, and they're heading up to Tonga this weekend. They reckon there's a massive swell coming down from Hawaii.
Yeah, there's big, really big swell in Hawaii at the moment. It was forecasted to be a lot bigger than what it ended up. I think it ended up moving a bit further than they thought. So it wasn't even end up as big, but that's going to be a good sign for Tonga. It's going to be pretty big there. Some crazy waves and untouched. Like, that's scary stuff. Like, surfing at Bondi is a lot different to Tonga. Like, you got no help over there. Something happens. Like, there's no ambulance. Like, you got to pretty much cater for yourself. Worst case scenario. So that's, like, to me, is almost more scarier than getting a wave at Bondi where there's an ambulance on the shore in 5 minutes for you.
Where's the scariest place you have surfed?
Probably down at Shipsterns in Tasmania.
Yeah, wow.
A place called Shipsterns Bluff, and that's kind of laid into Tonga. Yeah, hours to get to any kind of support. You're about an hour jet ski ride or a boat if something happens, plus another hour drive.
Do you listen to your gut? Do you go like, nah, I'm pulling this one? Or do you actually, or do you try and brave through it? I mean, what sense works when you're in the massive stuff? What's the sense that's all pervasive?
Maxie McGuigan, we're the same age. We've done it for a while together, and we pretty much just bang each other off each other's fears and just go like, holy shit, this is scary. And it's like, he'll push me to my limit, I'll push him. And then like, you just bounce off each other and you're like, we're doing it. And you just go, and that's kind of like, we haven't had that situation yet where we've had to back down yet. It's just like, just do it. And then at the end, you just high five and you're like, how good was that? Have a beer, talk about it. So we haven't had to think any more about that yet. But yeah, it's definitely something that goes through the mind and just push through.
And Chase, a little bit off topic, but I heard you've dived into a bit of modelling. Can you just give us a rundown of what type of modelling you've done?
Modelling?
Oh, geez, he's made Google his friend, isn't he?
Is this back in my day, the hand modelling?
Yeah, so the Hazard Twins have told me that you're a hand model.
Yeah, there's a running joke going on. Oh. The boys at the Mad Hueys, I was doing a bit of modelling and getting some photos in. And back in the day, I was doing some hand modelling, so it's still the joke that I should stick to hand modelling.
Yeah. You must watch Bondi Rescue.
Yeah, I used to. Now I'm more of Real Housewives.
Love Island.
You're standing next to a reality television star.
I know. Very exciting times. What's it like filming a show like that?
Yeah, oh, it's pretty sick. Like, being down on one of those busy days that they get to film, that yeah, they probably get, like, they're there a lot of the time, and most of the days don't get shown. But those days where it is, it's like 10% of the day gets shown. Like, there's almost not enough in the episode. Like, and they're picking out characters for the rescues. Like, you could do 100 rescues in one day on that one rip, and then they pretty much don't have enough time to show it in that one day, and they'll just pick three characters that were did a good interview after or something. But, like, you're just flat stick, and it's just like talking on brick wall all day. Like, I can't speak Chinese or any other languages.
I feel like I always swim down near where Backpackers Rip is.
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously I grew up around the beach, but I feel like I do you guys a disservice because I'll like go and jump in. And obviously I know the ocean, but yeah, then there's like these people watching me and that they're just going to start jumping in. It's like the worst spot you can swim. Yeah. That's where I like to go, South Bondi, like just jump in there.
And how can you spot a rip? Because I always find myself in a rip. I grew up in Canada. I always try and look out for them. Is it true?
You're not supposed to spot them and jump in there.
No, well, I look at that and I go, stay away from me, and I go over there. But then it comes flying. Yeah, and then I'm like, on the back of the ocean, I can't swim. I can't swim at all. And I grew up on the beach my whole life. My dad's a surfer. He threw me into nippers when I was like 3, scarred me, and I've never gone back in again.
Yeah.
So I got up to like here. And the one day I'm in the water, I always get stuck. Is it like the rip? Is it the ripple that doesn't break?
Yeah. So this is the hardest part, is people that aren't confident in the ocean always go to where the waves aren't. Like if you've ever been into a rip before, like, it just goes straight into deep water. So everyone thinks, oh, yeah, there's no waves here.
Yeah.
So they just follow it into where they think's the safest. Mm-hmm. And it's always wherever the calmest is that it looks is actually the most dangerous. And that's
beautiful. So yeah, okay.
Just do the opposite next time. Try find the rip.
I reckon if you do the opposite of what you think and like,
I'll actually go well out. I'd be like,
are there any locals breaks in Aussie that the locals are a bit too fierce for you? Or, I mean, I suppose a guy like yourself, you're basically safe. But, you know, what's the toughest beach? What's the toughest locals only break?
Around here, it'd be close to us is Cape Solander. I don't know if you've guys heard of that wave. It's over at Kurnell, Botany Bay. Pretty much a dry slab reef that breaks not very far from the rocks. Mm. Like, yeah, you just get ragdolled up there. I surfed there quite a bit. That's kind of where I found the love for it, is surfing that wave. And the more floggings you get, obviously the more comfortable you get. And then the more times I've hit the reef, the more times I pop up and go, actually, I was all right then. And I guess that's where the kind of the confidence come from. But then you also get the ones out there all the time that just get unlucky. Like, you can't control what's happening under the water. Sometimes you hit the off your knees, your feet, your hip and everything. And then you hear the unfortunate ones when they go upside down. So
what about the locals, like, you know, holding their reef and yeah, no, I'm just asking, you know, are there any spots in Aussie? Because you see a lot of it where locals are protecting their break and, you know, they're pretty fierce on it.
Yeah. No, that's the battle right now between Maroubra and Cronulla. It's like, whose break is it? And that's like...
Really?
And then there's also a fight between the boogie boarders and the surfers, because the surfers can't paddle into the waves, but the boogie boarders can. So, like, jet skis don't have right of way, but then we can't surf it without a jet ski. So it's like, they get the right... There's a lot of camaraderie between all those places, and I guess that happens more at the waves that no one is a local at, like Kurnell. And it's like, we run this wave, we surf this. Mm-hmm. And that happens quite a bit. But like beaches these days, like there's no locals. None of the boys are out there. There's just tourists and people that have moved in. And Connor. Yeah.
Do you look at paddle boarders and be like, yuck?
If they're coming through the way, look, I don't, but like, yes, if they're coming through a crowded break,
yeah,
it's like same as a foiler. I don't know if you guys have seen them.
What's
like,
a foiler?
It's like the, you've seen those hydro, like you guys got them over.
Oh, yeah, what are you, that's not exercise, is it? They're just standing.
Yeah, they're just standing. Well, it,
I should do that.
isn't it a mad quad burn?
Yeah, I think it would be. Yeah, no, it's going to be pretty hard. Yeah.
Okay.
Look, I think at the end of the day, the thing I've really taken out of this is the more floggings you get, the happier you are.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
A good way to live life.
Yeah. Well, it's a different thing at foiler in New Zealand too, isn't it, Rick?
Right, Chase, you've got to head off and go and save some people on the beach.
Me,
yeah.
So thanks for coming. And just as you're walking out the door, we're talking in a very positive way. And I saw this clip of an Australian soccer coach on the weekend that sort of summed up that attitude pretty well.
Yeah, but let's talk about the spectacle. How good a spectacle is it? You know, so often we got infighting in football in Australia and we put ourselves down and we say all the things that are wrong, and, you know, the criticism of our own game by our own people is just over the top. And, you know, I said during the week that this is the best spectacle in the domestic calendar, and one, I truly believe it. Two, I love NRL and I don't want to put... I don't want to give any other sport stick because I'll watch six or seven NRL games every weekend. So... But ever since I was a little kid in the mid-'80s and 90s, all I hear is the greatest game of all. And the NRL people pump up their own sport all the time. I see Peter Volandis on every single press conference telling the whole world how good his sport is. He's an advocate for his game. He's passionate about his game. He's advocate for his product. And we don't do any of that. We're infighting all the time. We're like two seagulls fighting over one chip. We've got nothing and we fight over it. Like, we've got an amazing product here, amazing fan groups, both fan groups tonight. The Sydney FC end was full. Our end was full. And it's a great spectacle. So I don't know why we always put ourselves down, you know. Of course, there's things we need to critique and do better, and we're always striving to do better because it's a global game. You know, we're not the NRL that's just popular in two states of the whole world. Like, we're the global game and we're competing. Matildas are in the top few in the world. Socceroos made the round of 16. 20,000 people came to watch an amazing spectacle and sing their hearts out. At some point, you've got to be grateful and celebrate the good parts of your game while at the same time trying to improve other parts. And, you know, I'm grateful to everyone who came out tonight. I thought it was an amazing spectacle. So, yeah, I thought I'd say that.
Yeah, so that's the Western Sydney Wanderers coach, Alan Stachic. I thought it was amazing. I thought, you know, let's be positive about our sport. Let's enjoy it. Let's celebrate when we're good at stuff. You know, I mean, he's right. Peter Volandis is unbelievable at promoting the NRL. Like, it's just, and you guys in the NRL, you're always talking up your game, you know, which is something that I think a lot
Rich,
of sports.
Did you get that that clip I sent you? Because I thought it'd be a good thing to promote the rivalry between Australia and New Zealand. It's one of those beautiful brotherly. Relationships where you've got Mahinga versus Mundine, Mundine Senior, the best, one of the best boxing fights ever. Can you play that?
I told you we can't play footage. Like we can't. That's copyright footage. What? We can't.
Mate, it's about 30 years old. What do you mean? You just buy it, buddy. He's like $100.
I can't use other people's footage. I mean, it was a great fight. You sent
it's
it to
me. It's the
greatest
fight ever, mate. Australia versus New Zealand. I mean, we pitted our best against the best, and by God, it was magnificent. Up there with sort of Hearns Hagler. Remember that?
Yeah, I know it was a great fight, but I told you a million times I cannot play copyright footage.
Just and buy it, mate.
Well, I've got no money.
$100. It's Trans-Tasman, New Zealand versus Australia.
All right. Lenny, you were going to say something intelligent?
Oh, Rick, yes. Just going back to that that footage of the coach. In Australia, I find that obviously when we're the world's best at something, we pump our own tyres up. But if we're not, we actually don't give a shit. So, for example, Ariana Titmus, if she doesn't win gold, her expectation is to win. If she doesn't win, we speak ill of her or down of her. And I think that's what the coach is trying to say there in soccer. Because we're not the world's best or the highest names, Ronaldos, Messi's of the world, we actually don't give a shit. Whereas in the rugby league, we are the shit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does, actually. It's a great segue to, you know, Macca's got this theory about why Australian sport is so good. And that's basically because, you know, most of you came here as convicts originally.
Don't look at me. I'm Italian. We didn't come as convicts.
No, I was just making conversation.
Do you want me to explain it, Rick?
Yeah, you explain it and then introduce our guest.
Well, no. What I was going to say is that the Aussie mentality is hardened, right? Like, you got sent to Aussie. We chose to come to New Zealand. Your bush is your enemy. Like, everything's going to kill you. ours is our friend. You know, there's nothing there that'll kill you. So the attitude is hardened. And I think the Aussie attitude is win at all costs. And we don't give a f*** about how you perceive us. Whereas we'd kind of prefer to come second and be seen as a good guy. So I love the Aussie attitude. I reckon it's a banging attitude. And we have a beautiful man here who deals with poisonous snakes, one of the many things that'll kill you in Australia. Part of
good,
you know,
good to see you again, Stu.
Good to see you. How are you, mate?
So, Stu from the Sunshine Coast snake catching organisation business. And you've been to Linny's house, is that right?
That is correct. But the snake evaded us, so we didn't find it, unfortunately. But so still you haven't there. Seen it again, have you, Chris?
No, I've seen a couple of others, but they're a bit further away. So,
because we don't have snakes in New Zealand, so is that like
we've got some in people form.
Yeah, we've got a few people like that. But
mate, there's a few floating up on the beaches now. A few sea snakes because the water's getting warmer. There's a few poisonous ones that have
all
just
right.
ended
we've
up
got
out here.
Three snakes in New Zealand. You've got quite a few in the Sunshine Coast, Stu. Is that fair?
That is correct. We catch up to around 20 different species. So that's not including sea snakes. You can probably add another 5 or 6 for them.
How'd you get into it? I mean, you know, everyone's terrified of snakes, but you've decided to make a business out of capturing and rehoming them.
Yeah, so I've always had an interest in reptiles from an early age. I sort of had lizards as pets growing up instead of your conventional dogs and cats. And then end up doing zoology and marine bio at university and then land a job at Australia Zoo, so that was pretty awesome. Worked there for around 7 years and was feeding all the crocs and playing with venomous snakes every day and then found out about snake catching and started as a hobby and now it's turned into a pretty busy business.
There's quite a decent sort of fraternity on Instagram about snake catchers not faring so well, you know, particularly the Indian variety. They're sort of trying to get them into a plastic tube and the things are wrapping around them or biting them. It makes great viewing. But what's the best technique for wrangling?
Yeah, it is interesting. All around the world, different snake catchers using different techniques, and I've seen plenty of videos like you're describing where they literally try and take a massive king cobra and then shove it down like a Pepsi bottle or something. So it's an interesting way of doing things. I certainly wouldn't try it, but no, with what we do, it's very much the opposite. The bag is big. There's plenty of space to fit the snake in, and we try and, I guess, handle them as minimal as possible and just get them in the bag as quickly as possible.
Is there a species of snake that you wouldn't try and catch?
No, there isn't. There's actually a few overseas exotic species which I'm really looking forward to wrangling one day, like the black mamba is probably the top of the list, I reckon. So I've handled king cobras and that before at the zoo, and they were quite a handful. But no, I don't reckon there's a snake I wouldn't try and wrangle.
Yeah, how do you snake-proof your house, though? Like, is there any ways? I've heard you can get, like, these solar lights that vibrate. There's lime powder that burns their bellies.
Like, when, seriously. You have a fear, eh?
Yeah, when you live where you are, Lenny, it's nearly impossible. So, no, it's...
I'm burning the joint down.
Yeah. Unfortunately, none of those vibrating devices work. There's no substance or powder or whatever that you can put around your house, like they'll move over any substrate. Even if your house was completely concrete, no gardens whatsoever, snakes could potentially still come in. So I guess it's just about keeping it neat and tidy just so they don't hang around for too long.
What's the nastiest snake in Australia? I mean, the one that you go, ooh, I'm going to have to give you respect.
I guess like there's a lot of highly venomous snakes in Australia, as we all know. I think we've got probably 16 of the top 20 or something like that. The list is always changing, but the Eastern Brown probably has the biggest and best reputation in terms of people like to call them aggressive. I like to call them defensive. You know, if it was an aggressive behaviour, they'd be coming after people every day, but they only defend themselves. That's all they do.
Stuart, have you had any sticky situations, you know, where you've been stung before and you've been out bush and had to get to the hospital, get some anti-venom?
I haven't actually. It's probably one thing I'm trying to keep on my record is no highly venomous snake bites, but I've had a few mates who've had some crazy stories of being bitten out west. So I don't do it too much because I'm too busy, but reptile people are a little bit weird in the fact that when they go on holidays, they'll also go looking for snakes elsewhere. And a few of my mates have gone out west trying to chase the inland taipan, which is the number one venomous snake on the planet, and a couple of them have been bitten. So to the point where they had to wrap them up. You know, the closest help is about 3.5 hours away via Royal Flying Doctor Service. So, yeah, and just some of the stories you hear about guys passing out, you know, leaking bodily fluid from all different areas and just absolute no control over their body. And then thankfully they've made it, and mainly that's because of the first aid that was applied at the time. But yeah, it's pretty scary. It's not something you want to experience.
Is the Taipan the one where you got to wait for the basically the venom to hit you before they can hit you with the anti-venom?
They all work kind of in that way. You don't want to just be given anti-venom. It's not one of those things where it's like an EpiPen where if you eat peanuts or something, you instantly just give that to you to avoid any issues. It's kind of, my understanding is kind of the opposite, because if they give you anti-venom when you weren't actually envenomated, because snakes can actually do a lot of dry bites as well. So brown snakes can do, I can't remember what the latest stat is, but it might be 60 or 70% of their bites are actually dry bites where they won't inject venom. So yeah, the doctors will take bloods every couple of hours for like 12 hours. And then once you start going downhill, that's when they'll hit you and start, giving you the anti-venom.
I get it for Lenny because, you know, being up on the Sunshine Coast, sort of surrounded by snakes. But, like, I set up base down here in Sydney, in the city. I'm not going to see any snakes, am I?
I was just down there last night giving a talk and chatting with all the snake catchers down there, and they're pretty busy as well. So,
I had a mate at university, had a snake, and he came home late at night and decided
I was worried where you're going with that story.
Well, I'll stop.
No, keep going.
Either way, he decided to play with it with some shampoo and it shed its skin.
Oh, I haven't heard the shampoo idea yet, but I might have to give it a go. But
don't fall asleep and leave it on for too long.
No, when a snake is going through that shedding process, water definitely helps. So I'm sure shampoo would help. So,
yeah, well, that was his idea, but
whenever a story starts, I had a mate at university, you know, it's somewhere you want to stay away from.
And there are no snakes in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Sorry, my apologies. Cut that out of the show, Rick, please.
I'm just keeping that in. Yeah,
thank you.
It sums you up beautifully. Stu, thanks so much for your time. And like, seriously, like, there are quite a few snakes down in this part of the world.
Yeah, especially down my area, for sure.
Cronulla.
And just on your comment at the start, talking about us big, brave Aussies, you should see some of my customers. It's the opposite, trust me.
We get plenty of
grown men who, at the sight of a snake, will run the opposite way. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Great and spider.
They have wide set shoulders and bald head.
And good at cricket? Maybe.
Did you get the cricket bat out when you saw the snake?
Nah, mate, you shouldn't harm animals. You know better than that, Rick.
That's exactly right.
Thanks, mate. I really appreciate it. That was awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Stuart. A few years ago, I went up to Bemiga, Cape York, to, went up there with a mate and we did some volunteering for like a wildlife conservation mob up there. And part of it was we actually had to do some snake wrangling. So they like took us out at nighttime and there'd be big pythons and that across the road. And mate's like, get out and go and grab these snakes and move them into the bush. But the reason why I was asking the questions about like the taipan and the venom was because he was telling me this story. This bloke, he lived in like a beach shack up at Bemiga up there. There's crocs everywhere. So, and his toilet, he had like an outhouse out the back. Walking across. So he's got like no phone service. Just got, what's Elon Musk's internet installed?
Starlink.
Just got Starlink installed. Reckons he's walking to the toilet, can't see anything, it's pitch black. All of a sudden he just feels this thing, gets hit, looks down, sees a taipan. Taipan just stung him on the way to the toilet. And then so he's like, I've got to get to hospital. Gets to hospital. And then basically they say to him, they're like, we need the venom from the snake to kick in before we can get you the anti-venom. So he reckons he's like laying there chatting to a nurse. She walks away. She's gone for like 5 minutes. All of a sudden, he's just like full paralyzed. He's sitting there. He's like dribbling out of his mouth, he reckons. He's fucked. And then the nurse walks past. She looks at him and goes, oh, shit, we need to get the doctor. But, yeah, he was like, mate, you got to wait until it kicks in. So just sat there for like 3 hours waiting for the anti-venom.
I did get this piece of video from Taylor. You haven't seen a snake at home.
No, no snakes, but we're riddled with spiders.
Yeah, like, yeah. And look at the size of the spider, man.
And this is just a daily occurrence in my house.
Oh, really?
Spiders.
See, they freak me out.
Yeah. We've had the house sprayed like 3 times. I don't know what they're spraying. Attraction.
Yeah, snake attraction. Yeah. Why they're attractive. Look at this spider.
That's small.
Well, these are huntsmen, eh? These are
This is at 10:30 at night too. So like we're ready for
that. Oh no,
nice. Marcelo, he's just wigging out.
Did Marcelo go and grab it?
Yeah, eventually.
They're actually not bad to have in your house these days.
I know, but still like
they're harmless, they're mine. So you just get the more team out.
Yeah, I know, but harmless when it's on my face when I'm sleeping with my mouth. Wide open.
Yeah, tape it up.
Tape on my nose.
Yeah,
I'm a bear. No thanks. And it moved. It was moving.
It's a spider. It's alive.
Yeah, I know, but it's got these things that come out of its mouth, and it moved. So I don't know what it was doing.
Fangs.
Yeah. Is that common for spiders to have?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Do you get wetters over there? Wetters?
Oh,
they're like a massive cricket,
yeah,
like about that big.
Oh,
and they've got
this
big biting sort of mandible on the front. And mate, we used to get them, and they've got a massive stinger on the tail, and they're black and yellow. They are. Disgusting. They give me the full yips. Like I'll tell you what, you Google a wetter, W-E-T-A. Yeah. That's some scary shit right there.
When
doesn't
I
do
first
any damage,
moved
but
to Auckland, we had a wetter tree in our house.
A tree with wetter.
They are disgusting. Like, everyone talks about Australian insects and stuff. Nah, that took the cake for me.
Yeah, they can't kill you.
Yeah, but they can with their looks.
The horned cockweevil in the South Island as well, which is...
Is that another friend at university?
Sounds like...
No, mate.
Look, mate, we're not going any deeper on the horned cockweevil. But what we will do is we'll listen to the great
John Clark.
It's
got a spinning tail and it burrs. It's a horrible thing.
The great John Clark will give us his summary of sport.
I was a keen swimmer, although once I got to the point of having to train, I started thinking there must be a more appropriate use of my life than laps. But I persisted with diving a bit longer. I got increasingly less interested in team games at secondary school because people got so terribly, terribly serious about them. And people were standing around in locker rooms swearing that when they went on the field they were going to, for instance, kill the other side. I thought, oh, well, this is not for me. This is just crap. So I sort of withdrew from the more murderous sections of the sporting spectrum. But I still like, you know, pretty well any sport. And I watch a fair bit of sport of one sort or another. And I like reading about sport. It'd be interesting if somebody writes something worthwhile about it one day. There's an enormous amount of written coverage about sport, of which almost none is readable and literate and interesting. And almost all of it seems to believe that the actual sporting event is the most important single event on the planet that day, whereas very often the crowd is more interesting than the sport, and very often what is said is more interesting than what is done. And I was at the footy the other day, for example. Sydney were playing Melbourne in the Australian football, and there's a famous player here called Tony Lockett. And Tony Lockett was standing up one end of the ground, and he's a goal kicker, so he's kind of a full forward, if you like, in a soccer terms. And the football was all up the other end of the ground. Had been for ages. Every now and again it'd look as if it had come down our end of the ground, but then it had receded and go back up. So he was standing down here very lonely, and one bloke a couple of layers above me in the wedding cake at the MCG had excused me his way to the end of his row and was just beginning to tack north to get out of the ground and go and do something, and he turned round at exactly the right moment in complete silence and yelled out to Tony Lockett, "Tony, I'm going for a pie. Do you want one?" And everybody applauded. 20,000 people at our end of the ground just erupted in them. You know, that's fantastic. I don't even remember the result of the game.
Yeah.
Oh, Fred Dagg, you've got to play these guys from Fred Dagg back from the day, because he was as good a comedian as you found in New Zealand. He was so dry. Beautiful.
Yeah. And then he came over to Australia and he was in Australia for like 20, 30 years. He's obviously before any of you guys were born. Yeah. Now to go from John Clark to, we thought he's funny.
I feel like he just said,
a whole lot then, but said nothing at the same time.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Like the shot. That's what he does.
Yeah.
That laugh now sign's going to do well in the studio.
All right, then. Smart ass. So TikTok is apparently a thing.
Yeah.
Here we go. This is stuff that we know for the young people.
Yeah. Finally, something worth watching on this show.
This is the sort of stuff that Taylor looks at. I asked her to send me some stuff from TikTok.
Yeah, it's just videos on my algorithm.
Just to get an understanding of the way her brain works and her algorithm.
Mark, sit down. Time for the pasta, Jesus.
No, just getting the dinner ready. Just boiling the water.
I just sat through your shit stories, mate.
Like, this is Taylor's TikTok feed.
I'm at the graveyard at night. Cleaning this abandoned grave? For free. I have so many questions in my head. What happened? How did this grave get so dirty? Who's buried here? Her name's Bienvenida. Wow, her name means welcome in Espanol. Wait a minute, her grave should be welcoming too. But right now, this is the dirtiest grave I've ever seen. That's so unfair. Everyone deserves a beautiful resting place. Bienvenida died on July 23rd, 1980. Her star sign is Aries. My best friend is an Aries. I wonder what Bienvenida's life was like. Does she like chocolate cupcakes? What killed her? This transformation is a lot of work. I might be here all night, but it's so fun. Ooh, a little bug.
Is she trying to be funny or is that...
No, she's not. She's not being funny. This is legit what she does. She goes and cleans graves. And she's famous for it. She's got like millions of followers.
That's just... Like, that sums up what's wrong with society.
Yeah.
There.
Week in and week out, I have to come in here about the ashes.
Yeah.
You can watch someone clean a grave. All right?
It's quite funny. Yesterday at the beach here, there was a guy and it was... No, because this it made me feel quite sad. You know, it was about 7 o'clock at night and he was out there with one of those metal detectors looking for f-ing rings or coins or shit like that. And I thought, how f-ing miserable is your life if that's what you do?
Well, like, if that's your gig.
That's your gig. I grab my metal detector and I go out and sweep the beach. And I thought, but if you actually sort of humanized it and you had a guy walking on a popular beach and put a big ghetto blaster on and he's wearing a pair of Speedos and then when he got something, he did a dance. He would be millions and millions of people on TikTok, YouTube. Everyone would be watching him. You'd actually get people going out and starting the metal detect.
Yeah.
It just needs to be, you know, PR'd properly, doesn't it? I mean, I felt sorry for this guy, but it just needed to be marketed.
Yeah, he just needs to sex himself up a bit.
Yeah, and that's what she's done with the grave washing. And, exactly. And I can understand how it appeals to you, but you are a little bit tweaked.
Yeah, my algorithm tells a clear story about the person I am. So,
I'll send you some metal detector stuff.
We've got another clip from Taylor's TikTok feed. This is a bit shorter.
Unpopular opinion. Stop telling women on the internet how beautiful they are and go say it to your wife.
Hey, babe, the women on the internet are beautiful.
That's me and my husband. See, it's not all doom and gloom. There's a bit of light and shade. Yeah,
it's nice. Yeah. It's nice.
Thanks, guys. Next week, I'll come with more.
I'm still trying to. The grave one just.
But can you believe, like, she would make a lot of money from those videos? Wrong. Is it though? Yeah, she's cleaning graves.
Rick, it's a bit close to home for you because you're not far out of one.
Yeah,
I'll
look for your coffin this
weekend. Don't worry, mate. I'll come and pop out on your grave. Oh. All right. I'll be cleaning it though, not with it.
To clean it.
All right, let's finish it on that note.
If I were you, I'd sprinkle your ashes, mate, because if you've got a grave, it's going to be desecrated.
That's like the nastiest thing you could say to me. And you've said some nasty stuff.
Oh, mate, you know
I think
you've
just gone too far now.
You know I love you. You know I love you. You know I love you. I just want you to eat well and, you know, just stay with us for a bit longer.
The other day, I went to get a chocolate chip cookie from a cafe. And there was a reflex action. I pulled back going, oh, no, Mark is in my brain.
It's good. Imagine if I hadn't been in your brain. Imagine how big you'd be. You wouldn't be here now.
No. Imagine what it's like living with you in my brain.
Yeah, it's a lovely place.
What would you rather?
Yeah. I think I'd rather be fat.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. We'll catch you next week, Linny and Sydney. All the best for the final.
Maka,
good luck for the romantic night for one. In the house bus.
Does it still work at 65, Rick?
I've got to go try it. See you, boys. And later.
See you, mate. I'm out of here, mate.
Look, I think the way to finish the show is to go to the philosophy of Chuma, bro.
Ever since 1823, when William Webb Ellis decided to pick the ball up and run with it, England were named the creators of rugby. There you go. But now I've got a little bit of a bone to pick with Northern Hemisphere sides, and in particular England. Because every time the All Blacks drop a game, straight away you fellas are bang! All the headlines, bro, all your sites is just like, go, go, go! Straight out there with the world rankings, eh? Soon as we lose, All Blacks plummet to an all-time low. 10th on the table. How the hell do we drop that low? Every time, bro, you fellas drop us from wherever we are. Congratulations on winning your Grand Slam. Took you long enough. When did you fellas last win the World Cup? 2003, eh? Shit, that's 23 years ago. That's going back. If we're all in the same car, right? Got the All Blacks in there, a couple of other teams in the back as well, because that's where we deserve to be at the moment. Obviously, South Africa will be driving, but you'd be that annoying passenger in the front, bro, with your bare feet on the dash. God, I hate people who put their feet on the dash. I'd like to ask the Springboks to hit the brakes so your knees go straight into your eye sockets. You duck egg, Bellend. Absolutely hard it. Bollocks.